This week on Breaking Badness, today we discuss first Bifrost of the season. A new variant of Bifrost has been discovered, and its aim is to bypass security measures and compromise targeted systems. Next up, do the side hustle? We're revisiting a forecast we made in 2023 that comes to fruition, and that is those who have been laid off are flocking to cybercrime. And of course, our fun game, Gold Guidance and Grievances. With that, Breaking Badness is next. Welcome to Breaking Badness, episode number 182, recorded on March 11th, 2024. I'm your co-host, Callie, Madam Dark Web Fencil, and with me is co-host Taylor, Stay By Frosty, my friends, Wilkes Pierce, and last but not least, Tim, starting the Cyber Skills Gap Band helming. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, hello.
I want to play in the Cyber Skills Gap Band.
Oh, you're absolutely hired.
Heck yeah.
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 For listeners who don't have any idea about this, Taylor plays guitar and sometimes
poorly.
We'll hear him playing it a little bit. Well, it doesn't sound poor from what we can hear. You know, and he'll strum a little bit in the background while we're starting or stopping the podcast or whatnot. And Callie and I are always trying to get him to play on the podcast, but he won't do it. But he can be in the Cyber Skills Gap Band.
Yeah, he'll do it right when we stop recording.
Yeah.
It's how we celebrate.
Yeah. So there you go. A little teaser, something you're never going to be able to hear.
And I think it sounds good.
Right.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
So I don't know what that's about. So maybe this is the right outlet to ask my question about cybercrime, which is, so I got a notification that my email address and password are on the dark web.
Was it from Have I Been Pwned, or was it from somewhere else?
It was from my bank, actually.
Was it really from your bank? That's
so,
the next question.
So I did not follow the link.
Good.
So first of all, the subdomain looked legit, but I didn't click on anything.
They often do.
I didn't click on anything.
Subdomains are the easiest ones to make look legit.
Yeah. But like I went to my bank's website directly and went into like the notifications, and the notification is there. So
okay.
That seems
so good. That was good
diligence.
So the recommendation was just change your email password. Like, is that...
Change your email address. Get a new one. Shred the old one.
Is that... No, but seriously.
Yeah, it... So, Callie, are you... And I don't mind sort of advertising for this because I think it's so great, but are you subscribed to Have I Been Pwned?
I am not.
Oh, you should check it out. And I would absolutely wholeheartedly recommend this to everybody. It will give you notifications. It's started by Troy Hunt, who is a pretty awesome person in the cyber realm. And it'll give you notifications if your email address, username, et cetera, have been seen in data breaches. And so it's a really good service. And every once in a while, you know, you will get those notifications. I mean, the fact is, if you've been around online for any amount of time, certain amounts of your stuff are going to show up due to some kind of breach. And so there'll be, you know, he'll give some recommendations on what you should do. And Have I Been Pwned was bought by, I think, one of the security companies. I can't remember who it is at the moment. But anyway, it's a free service that you can sign up for. And I recommend it to everybody.
Okay. But like, until I do that, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much should I freak out?
A hoodie rating directly for you.
Yes, for me.
It said your email address and something else. There were two things.
The password associated with my email address.
Oh, yeah. You should change that password. That's for sure.
I changed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I you know, as Taylor was joking, you know, it's just getting rid of your email address. That's pretty hard. It's not hard to get a new email address, but it's sure a hassle to change everything that's associated with an email address. And you probably don't need to. I mean, frankly, our email addresses are all over the place. And in a lot of cases, our our really primary ones, or the ones we use as junk email addresses, where we don't care if they get out there. But you, you don't need to, I would say, see what Tay thinks. I in seriousness, I don't think you need to change your email address, but or associate a different email with the accounts. But yeah, you did the right thing in changing the password.
Okay, cool. Taylor, I'm interested in your opinion as well.
No, I would put this at a very low hoodie rating. I mean, like, look, it's not, you know, in terms of how worried you should be, probably fairly low. I do think on a long enough time frame, kind of everybody's going to end up in Troy Hunt's data set.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel a little bit better because I have the propensity to go from 0 to 100 very quickly. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
No, that's all right. And something we've talked about on the podcast before, but probably doesn't hurt to reiterate, is that most services will allow you to create an addition to your email address. So you do your username and then you do the plus symbol and then you can put a, you know, any string you want after that before the @. And that makes, that sort of uniquifies your email and makes it harder for somebody to, you know, they can't sign into that service based on knowing your email address or attempt to if they didn't also somehow get a hold of the plus random string. So that's a thing that I have done on a lot of my sort of high stakes accounts.
Okay. That's, I like that idea a lot. Very good. Well, thank you to both of you for allaying my fears.
You know, the thing that Troy Hunt probably couldn't anticipate when he started that was how popular it would become, and therefore how much time and attention it probably took.
You can also yeet your passwords at him and see if they've been observed in a breach, which feels a lot riskier.
It feels so scary to do that.
Yeah. But yeah, and in fact, it's very possible that your bank is using, you know, his data as the back end to go find these matches and kind of
that's
tell people
possible
about them.
Yeah,
it probably wouldn't surprise me.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, this is like, you know, breaking badness, you know, for you or for me in real time. So thank you for that. Do we want to, maybe we'll pivot and we'll talk about something in the news that's not pertaining to me.
We could
at least
do that.
I don't think so.
I mean, that implies there are things in the news that are pertaining to you, but
yeah. Hey, wait a second.
Don't go.
But we already know you're famous.
Yeah.
Well, because I was on Zoom that one time. Three times.
Yeah, and for people who aren't who didn't hear that episode, she's not talking about Zoom, the video conferencing platform.
No, I'm talking about come on in Zoom.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, thrice I was on there. That was fun.
I think this is the first time thrice has been said on Breaking Badness.
I think so too, from at least in the time I've been on it. But yeah, so I was on Zoom. We can Google that. I can share it in the show notes if I feel like it. But we'll talk about our first article of the episode, which is first Bifrost of the season, which is sort of timely because in the Midwest it is second winter. So it's really second Bifrost of the season.
We have also had kind of a first/second winter here in Seattle over the last couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's doing its own thing for sure. But so Palo Alto Networks recently found a new Linux variant of Bifrost, which showcases a creative technique to evade detection. So starting off the bat, Taylor, what is Bifrost, a.k.a. Bifroze, or a.k.a. Bifroze, I'm assuming?
I think it's a froze. I think they enjoy a frozen rosé.
A nice froze.
And that's my headcanon for this threat actor. Bifrost or Bifroze has been around for a very long time. Let's call it going on 20 years. It was initially, so to kind of set the stage for how old it is, it can infect a Windows 95 machine back in the day.
Could it enjoy?
Well, you know, that's like half the ATMs out there.
Is it old enough to enjoy a Bifroze?
Oh,
that's a good question.
That's a great question. It doesn't look like it, but it's coming up.
Illicitly.
That's a big birthday.
It can enjoy one illicitly, you know, out in the alley behind the 7-Eleven. By the way, bifrosé just makes me think of wine coolers. Remember wine coolers?
Yes.
That was such a thing for a little while.
Is it not a thing anymore?
I think they still probably exist, but like they were really trendy for a while. But we're talking way back.
We're probably replaced by like a seltzer.
Yeah, the hard seltzers. Yeah, probably.
That's what's so hot right now. Anywho. So it's coming up on 20 years.
Yeah, first identified in 2004. So we're hitting on that 20. We're getting close to Bifrost being able to buy a Bifrosé.
Excellent. How is it typically distributed?
In this instance, it's getting distributed, and it has in the past been distributed via email links. So there's just like it goes via email attachments. Over 20 years, it's been distributed in a lot of ways. but in this particular instance, the Palo folks are saying email attachments.
Gotcha. Is that the only thing that's different about this version so far? Or what is Palo Alto seeing that's different with this latest version?
Yeah, so there's a few things. First off, you know, this was originally designed for Windows at some point in the 2010s. It gained Linux powers. And so we're seeing a Linux variant of it here. And so, you know, they've seen it over the last, let's say, 4 or 5 months here, kind of a resurgence in this particular brand of malware. But it's been around for quite a bit.
Gotcha. So Palo Alto found the latest sample of Bifrost and the sample of binary compiled for x86, and it seemed to be stripped. So what exactly is a stripped binary?
Stripping a binary is fairly normal. It's where you pull out some of the information about the binary that would give you like debugging ability. On the adversary side, they're doing it for obfuscation. It makes it trickier to reverse engineer the malware when it's stripped on the kind of normal world side of things. Stripping it may be for performance to kind of trim down the size of the executable file. But in this case, you know, almost certainly we're not caring about performance here. We're probably caring primarily about the ability to obfuscate what they're up to inside of the file. Now, it's compiled for x86 processors, which are, you know, the very common. You'll see those in most Windows, common Windows machines, the older Intel MacBooks. So
are those still around?
No, I mean, I'm looking at one right now, but
Is it holding up other stuff?
Yeah, no, it's holding up my podcast record. It's doing great.
Oh, nice.
Look, that type of architecture, if you care, it's easier to virtualize things on. There's got a much more mature and robust ability to do virtual machines on x86 derived hardware. ARM based, which they found a different server that was hosting an ARM version of this malware as well. So ARM is a different type of processor, more commonly found across your mobile devices because it generally is low power. But ARM has come a long, long way. From the RISC stuff has come a long way. And from a performance perspective, you're seeing it in like the new Apple hardware. Of course, all of the Android devices out there leverage it. A lot of IoT things leverage it. So, you know, if you're looking to spread malware far and wide, ARM is not a bad choice to compile your binaries for.
But don't take Taylor's word for it. First of all, you said if we care, and I do care. So follow-up question, if attackers use techniques like the strip binary, which, you said it was like more standard than I had initially thought, how do defenders eventually detect it?
So they can see pretty easily that, hey, there's no debug detail here. and then it makes the reversing job a little bit trickier. But on the defender side, they've been at this for quite some time. So this is nothing super new for them. But in this particular case, one of the interesting things and what kind of brought it to our attention here is that the adversary is leveraging a VMware lookalike domain to handle command and control for the malware. So, that caught our attention. It's not a super new tactic by any means, but kind of hiding in what you might expect to see on in network traffic, aka a VMware domain, is a good way to potentially not get caught. In this case, one thing that I found interesting was the domain was registered almost a full year ago and then doesn't look to have been weaponized until like the October-ish timeframe is when we see the malware samples start to pop up. So, either
aging domains.
Yep, exactly. So that I found kind of interesting, or the other, maybe it was used for something else. We didn't see a lot of DNS activity on it up until the kind of September, August, October timeframe. So, that doesn't surprise me, but I thought that was an interesting play on top of the technique. Like, hey, we're going to look like something and we're going to sit on it for 6 months before we weaponize it.
Yes, and it's the yes and of attacks, potential attacks. So what are the recommendations here for, now that we've seen this, how does one combat malware like Bifrost?
It was really interesting because this is older malware. There weren't a ton of hooks. It was pulling information about the systems like host and IP, but not a lot else. So perhaps this is just like stage one or collecting information. I'm not sure. The Palo folks are like, hey, just use all the wonderful Palo products where we'll do discovery on this for you. But certainly being vigilant on emails, not, clicking through and opening things up in Windows that you just got from a random email would be kind of step one. And then for the defender side, there's signatures and behavioral stuff that they can take a look at from what the Palo folks have put out there off of this. But this is not, again, it's not like a super new or novel piece of malware. If anything, it's really interesting how old it is.
It's just coming back in style.
Yeah, exactly, right? We're going to get bell bottoms and then Bifrost.
Crop tops. Seen bell bottoms come and go a couple times.
Are they in right now?
No, I don't think so.
Ooh.
Okay. Just give it a few weeks.
Yeah, it'll come back. Fast fashion-esque. Well, thanks, Taylor. I think this leads us nicely into our hoodie rating. And if you are a newer listener, after we talk about our articles, we like to either assign them a hoodie rating or a goodie rating. In this case, probably a hoodie rating, which is, a scale of 1 to 10. If you can imagine a stereotypical hacker in a hoodie, a scale of how bad this is, really. So 1 is not so bad. 10 is, the beginning of this episode where I went, oh my God, my stuff's been on the dark web. And Tay goes, oh my God, no. So it's like that.
I don't remember his reaction quite being like that.
Oh, but I guess maybe that's what I heard. I knew he was messing with me, but I also am, I have a certain naivete about myself. I have a naivete about Tay. Anyway, so Taylor, you were sharing this information. So Tim, why don't we start with you? What are you thinking hoodie-wise?
Sure. I think when folks go to the, if you look at the show notes and then you click through to the article, which is, we consistently see great stuff from the Unit 42 folks at Palo. So I always like reading these things. But the title of their article is The Art of Domain Deception. So I think from their perspective, it was almost more interesting just to dig into a little bit what the infrastructure is that this malware is using. But they, of course, along the way described what the malware is doing itself. I do think it's interesting whenever we see, when you think about Linux malware, and then you think about what the particular malware is trying to do. So in this case, it's a rat and it involves, it requires some connections out to these deceptive domains. I tend to think of deceptive domain stuff as being oriented toward let's fish somebody, let's trick the user. But when I think about the attack surface against Linux, unless I'm mistaken, and we already have had the year of the Linux desktop, I didn't think we had, but you're going to have a vastly smaller population of, if you're going after kind of Linux desktop type machines and user environments, that's going to be a much smaller attack surface than, as Tay was saying, embedded systems and servers and stuff like that, which have a lot of Linux activity. So you know, I may be misunderstanding, but from the perspective of going after user type interactions on Linux, I think combine that with the fact that this has been around for a while, there are pretty good techniques for detecting it and thwarting it. I don't think the hoodie rating is real high. I will say 3.5.
Okay. That feels reasonable. Taylor, do you feel similarly?
Tim, every year is the year of the Linux desktop.
Just like it's the year of IPv6. I know it's been the year of IPv6 for 20 years
old. Although, truthfully, you know, we live in a post-Raspberry Pi world. So there are legitimately a decent number of folks that are daily driving small Linux machines.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
Chrome OS, you know, its core has got. It's got some stuff. So, like, yeah, you're not wrong that there was a reason this sucker was compiled for Windows back in, you know, 1997 or something. And Linux came around 15 years later. But, yeah, I think that, especially depending on what part of the world you're targeting with this stuff, too. Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm similar, though. Just, you know, it doesn't look like it's the most widespread thing in the world, and it doesn't appear to be you know, it's not super duper new, so we'll go, yeah, I think 3.5 hoodies is great. I'm gonna just hang out there with Tim at 3.5 hoodies. We've got 3 hoodies, we got each have a half a hoodie on, which then make kind of a full hoodie, I think, if
does
we stand next to each
that,
other.
Yeah, maybe what happens is the extra hoodie is just sort of traded back and forth every once in a while, you know.
It's the hoodie you keep in the back of your car when the weather decides that it's going to do this.
Yeah. I can keep it in the back of my car for a while, and then Taylor can keep it in the back of his car for a while, and that's all that happens with it.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. Well, great. Thanks so much, Tay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about do the side hustle. You're going to want to stay tuned for that because it does end in a question mark. So, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hi there, Breaking Badness friends and family. Colonel Panic, or Tim, here from the team. If this is your first time hearing our production, welcome aboard. If you're a longtime listener, you can't be a first-time caller because we don't do that. But what you can do is leave us a 5-star rating, and if you're feeling extra ambitious, a review wherever you get your podcasts. And for new and returning listeners alike, tell a friend if you're enjoying what you're hearing. Thanks a bunch, and now let's get back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hello.
So who currently has the hoodie from our last discussion? Who's holding on to it currently?
Not me.
I'll have to go look. It must be in the back of my car somewhere. Actually, the back of my car is fairly clean these days. You know, when I was young, there was all kinds of stuff that was back there.
Treasures.
Not usually. No. But it wasn't gross stuff. It wasn't stuff that made the car smell bad or anything like that. It was just clutter.
I usually have a bag that I drive around that is meant to go to the thrift store. But I have to drive it around first for like 6 months.
It has to go on a journey.
That's right.
It has to see the sights before it, you know, gets dropped off.
You should give the bag a name.
Like what kind of name?
I don't know. Just, you know, Fred or.
You know what's so funny?
Jill or.
I was thinking Fred.
Oh.
Oh.
There's a brainwave going on.
We've been hanging out too long. But, you know, this actually dovetails very nicely into what we're going to talk about in terms of forecasting. And it's just I love when this stuff happens, when it's just happenstance like that. But we actually, this is all the way back in 2022, we had a forecasting webinar for the year 2023. And we predicted that there would be an increase in cybercrime from those who had been laid off it from cybersecurity positions. And so we went through the whole year and it didn't really seem like that came to fruition, or we didn't have the data to back it up. And now this past week, we're seeing articles unfold telling that story, that prediction has indeed come to fruition. So Tim, I'm sure I can take a guess, but you were part of that webinar panel when we made that prediction. So what is your initial reaction to seeing the data that's come from this, that that it's actually come true?
Well, you know, it's fun to be right about things that you predict, but it's certainly not fun to be right about this in this particular case. And I think there's probably been some baseline of this happening forever, but clearly it's accelerated recently and there's a lot more of it. So yeah, I personally wasn't the one that made that prediction, but our colleague who did, I think, had good reason to think of that. And unfortunately, he was right.
Was that Sean? I think it
was. It was. Yeah, that was Sean.
That was Sean McNee, everybody.
Sean, with the gift of prophecy.
Mm-hmm. It's a curse, right? I think it's probably more of a curse.
I want to see what else. He had a prediction this past year about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. I wonder if that will come true.
That's a little bit lower stakes unless you're them or the marketing people that depend on that relationship going on.
So true. So true. But so Tim, as a veteran of the industry, well, both of you are really veterans of the industry. So have either of you seen any other moment where layoffs have been as prevalent as they've been recently? And I'm only asking that because I'm wondering how the panel on that webinar came to that assumption that cybercrime would be appealing to those being laid off. Was there any precedent for it before?
I think everybody has seen how much, unfortunately, how much money there is in cybercrime. And it's not hard to ever find statistics about it, whether you're looking at just the, ransomware payoffs or data theft and sales thereof and so forth. It's been pretty clear for a while that there's a lot of illicit money to be gained. As far as other times of seeing layoffs at a large scale, I don't recall seeing numbers like we've been seeing recently. So, if we go back more years than it feels like, but back to the Great Recession, that hit a lot of folks across all sectors, including tech. But I don't think it was in the numbers that we're seeing now. And then, I'm enough of a veteran, I guess, to remember, going back to the aftermath of the dot-com bubble, and there were a lot of folks, companies went out of business and so forth. Now, a lot of those were startups or fairly small companies, and there weren't nearly as many people working in tech anyhow because it hadn't become as big as it is now. So maybe as a proportion of all tech workers, the hit that they took after the dot-com bubble might have been proportionally as big as what we're seeing right now. But anyway, no, I don't think I recall seeing the kind of stats that we're seeing these days.
What I remember is more insider threat. So like when you think about it, it's like kind of two sides, like, hey, I'm getting laid off and I do something bad on my way out the door.
Yeah.
Or get laid off and then I go, oh, I should, go become a criminal. So I seem to remember a few of the prior from the financial crisis. So I think certainly that there was an impact there, but I don't know that there were quite as many, folks in InfoSec at that point in time that could then, flip hats, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's become, for reasons that we've talked about on the podcast, it's easier than it's ever been to start a career in cybercrime. So like a TV commercial. But between affiliate programs and all the kind of tech support and everything.
The downside is that it's easier than it's ever been to start a career in cybercrime.
Yeah. I mean, that's really a bummer. That's probably part of what's contributing to this. Because there's such an ecosystem around it. And, it used to be, you used to have more technical chops. Mm-hmm. It used to be harder to find where your entry point would be, and they've really made it easier. Is it a perfect storm? It's kind of almost a perfect storm scenario, I think.
I also, I wonder what the psychology is behind
the decision to change hats, so to speak, too. Like, I wonder, like, I don't think anybody's like, I've been laid off, it's time to do a crime. Like, I wonder.
Well, clearly, I think this story is saying some people think that.
Well, some people, I think some people think that, but I wonder if some people are like, it's not really a crime. And then, like, justify, like, do a lot of mental gymnastics.
Or victimless crime.
Yeah. Like, to justify the means to the ends. I don't
know. Sticking it to the man.
Yeah. Oh, the man. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Tim, I think a lot of this conversation is purely speculation, which I love, but do you think that this prediction wasn't something, you know, like management of organizations considered when carrying out these layoffs? Like, I guess we need to start with, you know, are these layoffs more about people were overhired than anything else? Like, is that the root cause of the layoffs?
Well,
I think there's a lot of speculation.
Boy, if we could crack this one.
Yeah, I think so. There's a combination of things. And to go into the specific part of your question, that's like, were they thinking about the security risk of what would happen if you lay off large numbers of tech people? IT and security governance is always a risk balancing game. And so it's probably not that many companies it never occurred to them that the layoffs could lead to some bad behavior. But they decided the financial risks were greater, or the rewards, you know, ROI was higher, et cetera, than the risks, the security risks. And, you know, there's enough knowledge of best practices that most of these companies probably took some care around shutting off access post layoff. And also, you know, remember that there's only maybe there's a subset of this where the laid off former employees are targeting the organization that laid them off. I mean, in some cases, it's just they've been laid off, and now instead of going out and pounding the pavement and getting another job that's advertised on LinkedIn, they pound a different kind of pavement and go out and start doing some crimes underground, but not necessarily against their former employer. So you could think, you know, I'm going to lay off a bunch of people. Are they going to make the world a worse place? Kind of in general, they might, but, you know, that's probably not something that keeps a lot of the management up at night.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. So I was hoping you could clear something up for me.
Yes, let's clear the air.
Yes, let's get down to brass tacks. It's one of my favorite phrases. So this article begins by discussing the shift from legitimate cybersecurity work to cybercrime, but then pivots to discussing how cyber needs to adapt to solve the skills gap. And is the bridge to making this argument that the industry initially hired folks too senior for the roles they were in? I wasn't sure how they made the pivot from the one topic to the other.
Right. Yeah. So the first thing I'll mention is that in my opinion, the article kind of glosses over a really important point, and this is assuming that the data we're talking about is accurate. I have no reason to believe that it's not, but that is that the majority of the tech layoffs aren't necessarily the folks writing code. There have been a lot of layoffs in marketing and administration and other non-technical jobs in tech. And so so that's really when we think about the big numbers of layoffs. And also, I think probably most of the people that are the subject of this article that are doing crimes now are not those marketing and administrative type folks, but they're really technical people. So, and the other thing that happens in this article is it seems like it's sort of conflating two different things. One is these layoffs and the other is burnout. And both of those things could lead to legit workers turning to crime, but possibly in different ways, right? So if you look at the burnout scenario, that might be where the more dangerous situations come from, because you've got high technical skill people, and they might do exactly what Taylor was talking about. Like, before they leave the company, either because they're burned out or because they think layoffs are coming or whatever, Or their job has become more stressful because other people who were burned out have left, and therefore the workload has gotten bigger. And they still have access, before they leave their companies, if they do. That's where you can have that higher risk. You know, in the old days, it used to be somebody would drop trow, sit on the Xerox machine, make 100 copies, and that was their way of expressing their opinion to the company when they left. Now it's potentially a lot worse than that. So you could see that. And again, about burnout, when you lose good folks to burnout, that makes life harder for the people who remain. And then there's just a cascading effect, right? Because now my job is harder. I was already potentially close to burned out. My colleague who was totally burned out left, and now I inherited part of their duties. And now I'm going to be closer to feeling burned out. So maybe I'll leave too, and so on and so forth. So the main part of the article was about the layoffs, but they do bring up the burnout factor. And the question, back to your other part of the question about, is it that the industry hired people that were too senior for the roles they were in? My guess is that that's not numerically the biggest part of what's going on here, because the layoffs are so extensive that it doesn't seem to me that would be the where the center of gravity is, that people were too senior for the roles that they were in. I think that, you know, one of the things, unfortunately, that may have happened and this was predicted as soon as Musk purchased Twitter and decided that he was going to cut vast numbers of employees. You know, he said, look, we're bloated. There's way too many people here. And he fired thousands of engineers. And there were a lot of folks who said, boy, Twitter's going to tip over. There's no way it can be maintained. And at the lower numbers that they now have, the skeleton crew that was left. Now, say what you will about Twitter, and I personally think it's become just an absolute dumpster fire, and that's why I still call it Twitter. I won't even use the new name. It's a total dumpster fire, but not necessarily because servers are tipping over and the service is becoming unavailable and all of that. There have been some glitches like that for sure, but I think what's made it a dumpster fire has much more been the choices about what, you know, who's going to be on there and what kind of content is going to be on there and so forth. So other companies, and this was predicted, would look at this and go, well, if they don't fall over after firing a lot of their supporting technical staff, then, well, maybe we have too much supporting technical staff in our platform and we're going to do the same thing. And there has been absolutely a certain amount of that, unfortunately. And so that, in those cases, those aren't necessarily, again, people that were too senior for the roles they were in. It was just a matter of companies feeling like they could do more with less. And, you know, maybe that's working out for a lot of those companies. Don't know.
Got it. Thanks, Tim. And this kind of dovetails into my final question. You've made the argument before in a blog post, which was called We Need More Roads to InfoSec. And it seems like most of the industry is shouting it from the rooftops that there's too many requirements or training required. The compensation isn't where it should be. So it seems like, you know, practitioners are in agreement that the burnout of that this article is mentioning is a very real thing. But what do you think will need to be the catalyst for leadership at these organizations to finally listen?
Well, so there's a certain number of companies, and it's a large number, that are, they're just always going to put the near-term bottom line ahead of all their other considerations. And that goes back to what I was saying about Twitter. They went, they got by with just a skeleton crew of engineers. Let's try to do the same thing. Wow, our cost basis just went down a whole lot, and maybe our profits are staying the same or getting higher. Who knows? So what will be that catalyst? I think this is getting to another thing, and this is back to our little title of the article about the skills gap. The skills gap remains. Yes, there is. I do think that there needs to be more internal promotion wherever that's possible, and better career paths for folks, and so filling that gap from within before filling it from without, I think is going to be helpful in a lot of cases. Now, what I don't think is going to be the catalyst to these changes is the centerpiece of this article, which is legitimate former cyber professionals turning to crime. I don't think that's going to be the thing that causes the tipping point, if there ever is a tipping point with this. I think there are cultural changes that seem like they're positive. And one of the things I point to is that there's better, when we talk about burnout and the things that make it hard to be in a tech job sometimes, there's much more forthright conversation about mental health. And I think that's a really positive development. And the community, I've seen a lot of really prominent people in the InfoSec community talking pretty openly about this and about how we need better supports for folks and everything. So that has the potential to help with the burnout problem. I say potential. I don't know if it's ultimately going to. I think that knowing that there are more resources and that people who are having a really hard time are not alone, I think those are good things. Are those going to change the hiring habits and the cultures of companies at a large scale? That remains to be seen. I'm a bit skeptical, unfortunately, but we'll have to see how it turns out.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for all of your insights, Tim. Let's talk about the hoodie rating for this particular scenario. Taylor, having listened to all this, what are you thinking hoodie wise?
Yeah, I think I'm going to score this out of 10 copy machines.
Yeah, that was a very specific example.
You know, I think.
Wait, no, not copy machines. How many copies?
How many copies?
Oh, no.
How many sheets?
Oh, boy. I'll go. This seems like, without like a lot of hard evidence that there's like some massive crime wave ring or like giant increase in insider threat stuff from folks who are heading out the door, I'll go 4.5 copies.
Okay. The last one just kind of gets stuck in the copier.
Yeah, it is paper jam.
Gotcha. Okay. Tim, how many copies for you?
That reminds me, I think I need a PC load letter t-shirt. I don't have one of those. Probably need it. Yeah, let's stay with copies. Is this a to 10 scale?
Like yeah.
The machine was almost out of paper.
Yeah.
So it only had 10 sheets possibly left. Yeah. It's a maybe a rise above the noise level that we've always had in terms of cybercrime. As I said at the beginning, I think there's been a certain amount of this that has always gone on. And even during the prior waves of layoffs, there might have been some of it. But for the reasons I mentioned, there's probably more going on now. But I think it's a blip above the noise. I don't think it's a giant spike. So I'm going to go just a hair lower. I'm going to go 4 copies. And in this case, there happens not to have been a paper jam, which is very unusual because there are always paper jams.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. Well, that seems right sized to me. Before we adjourn for the day, do we want to head into our gold guidance and grievances?
Oh, for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. So again, if you are a newer listener, we like to conclude our episodes by sharing our gold guidance and grievances, which are pretty much exactly what they sound like. We share a piece of good news, some tips that we might have, and then anything that's bothering us. And what we also like to do is start with the grievance and work our way back to the gold so that we don't end on a sour note. So we just heard from Tim. So Taylor, do we want to start with you on your gold guidance and grievances, not in that order?
Sure. You know, I don't have a ton specific grievances. I have a lot of specific grievances, but I got a lot of bones to pick with you. No. Seeing that Microsoft was potentially breached again, off of the back of the initial breach where their like executive emails were getting read, that was, it's kind of a bummer. feel bad for the Microsoft friends. It looks like they snagged source code and some other things. So that's a bummer. We didn't have time to really explore that as a story, but I'll put that as a grievance. More grievance. I don't have any. There's no good news. Nothing good happened.
Well, what about just like in general, just your general life?
I've got some gold for you.
So good. Thank you.
Okay. You have to know where to look around. And sometimes it's the little things in life. I'll just leave it that way.
Taylor, for such a happy guy, you surprise me every week where you're like, you know what? I'm actually upset about everything.
You know, there was the old Far Side cartoon where it's hell and there are fires in the caverns and whatnot, and there's a couple devils, and there's a guy walking by pushing a wheelbarrow and he's whistling, and that one devil's saying to the other, you know, I think we're just not getting through to that guy.
All right, we got a new NIST framework 2.0. Woo! There we go.
Yeah. There's probably a new attack matrix coming along any minute because they keep doing new flavors of it.
All right, Tay. We'll kick it over to Tim.
Okay. Well, I have one of each category here. So my grievance, I saw that the newest, or at least the newest that I've seen, Boston Dynamics robot video, and, all full marks to the technology itself, but I just think that Boston Dynamics trying to portray their killing machines as cute is something that grinds my gears. And sure, they're not going to be killing machines. They're going to go do dangerous things like defuse bombs and stuff like that. Yeah, maybe. So that's my grievance about Boston Dynamics. My guidance is teach your kids about deepfakes and other disinformation. Like, this should be part of education in public schools, private schools, and in homes. And the election season is getting revved up. Deepfakes are flying around, and there's going to be just more of that leading up to November. And I mean, everybody needs to learn how to suss out and determine the difference between garbage information and stuff that's real. But we need to make sure kids understand this. So teach your kids about some of this stuff and teach them to be savvy about it. I think most Breaking Badness listeners who are parents probably are doing that. But anyway, okay, gold. There is gold out there. And you can find, if you go to Wired, wired.com, you can find John Malkovich answering the web's most asked questions. I love John Malkovich, and this is absolutely gold.
I've always wanted to be John Malkovich.
Well, yeah, there's a movie that shows you how.
I love when they have people answering the most answered questions. It's delightful.
Mm. Yeah.
Daniel Radcliffe's does not disappoint.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Have to look for that.
Please
one.
Check that out.
Yeah. So there you go.
I think one
there is gold out there.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the questions Daniel Radcliffe asked is one of the searches is something along the lines of, like, is he related to Elijah Wood or something like that? Because the two look pretty similar.
Mm. And he has a good response to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Twins separated at birth.
So there's Callie's guidance, is look for the Daniel Radcliffe edition. By the way, this is not apropos what we're talking about right now, but I had to look it up while we were going through the podcast here, and I was wrong. Have I Been Pwned does not appear to have been acquired by another security company. I think it's still its own thing. So that's good. But anyway, big supporter of it.
Do you think I'll regret looking up my information? Do you think it'll scare me a lot?
It might, no. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. But, yeah. Again, like, not only look up your information, look up the information of people who are close to you and let them know about it too.
Throw all of your old email addresses in there. Just see,
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, look, we all know that this stuff is out there, and it's better for us to know than not to know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you get some frantic Slack messages after that, you know where.
First, we'll make sure they're really from you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this is always, it's been fun. It's always fun talking to you too. Thank you both for sharing your insights on those stories this week and your gold guidance and grievances. Thank you to our listeners out there. We really appreciate you tuning in, and you know, be sure to come back next week because we'll have another all new episode of Breaking Badness. You know, stay frosty out there and stay bifrosty out there.
Oh, excellent advice. Bye-bye, y'all.
Bye.
That's about all we have for this week. You can find us on Twitter at Domain Tools. All of the articles and IOCs mentioned today will be included in our blog post, which can be found at domaintools.com/resources/podcasts. Catch us every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time when we publish our podcast and blog. We'll see you next week on another episode of Breaking Badness. Until then, remember, don't drink and click.